Hi, Ed. Thanks for joining us again.
Hey, yeah, Dave. Yeah, thanks for having me back.
Right. Researching animals is one thing, but researching the facts surrounding the impact of a giant bolide, giant meteor, asteroid, whatever it is a different thing entirely. So were you confident in taking on something that is, I guess, so outside of your immediate background? You know, you're not an expert in planetary collisions and physics and any of that.
No, absolutely not. I don't know if confident is the word I would use going into it, but I was definitely interested and excited to learn a lot about it as well. See, it's the biggest event, I guess, that's ever happened on Earth, arguably, and certainly one of the biggest sort of points within the series. So I guess I wouldn't say I was confident going into it, but I was excited to learn about it. And as I did, maybe as I learned more about it, maybe my confidence went down, because it's just a whole world of physics and geology and paleontology that is just vast and much more intertwined, I think, than other sequences we were looking at. You know, when we're looking at species for other topics, it was, you know, what do they look like? What do you think they could do? And what's the narrative? But there's such a mess of things going on with this giant impact that it was really challenging to bring it together. And I said my job is to try and find out as much as I can about it, but then break that down into very simple, not simple, but concise terms to then provide to the rest of the team. And so getting my head around everything and then being able to break it down was very tricky. But again, had a huge amount of support from different scientists. And Sean Gillick and Gareth Collins were both phenomenally helpful throughout, along with a lot of other people. But whenever I got a question that I thought I'd known most things, and then I'd get a question that I completely didn't know, luckily there was lots of people on hand that were happy to help.
Oh, for sure. These kinds of things, as soon as you start digging into the detail, the first thing you realize is that you really don't know very much at all.
Yeah.
So yeah, exactly. Yeah, you quickly realize that. So I guess you got to be flexible as part of this job and approach unknowns in a way that you can get answers efficiently and correctly.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you can't, before it's all been researched properly, you can't work out what your final result's going to be. You have to make sure you do the research first. And so then you can remain flexible and you know, you learn about one part of the asteroid impact that you had no idea was going to happen. You know, the whole sky is on fire and, well, it's not on fire, actually, it's technically correct. But, that, you know, these huge impact events that happen and then you think, oh my God, that's insane. You know, didn't realize that before. We've got to get that in the show. And so, yeah, definitely listening to what we find and the people we speak to, have to be willing and flexible to adapt, because that's ultimately what makes the show better. If you try and stay too fixed into an initial preconception, then you might be able to pull that off, but you might then miss out on a lot of amazing information and story that you didn't realize was there.
Mm. So you've been told we're doing this scene and you're researching it, and you can look at the scientific literature, and in there you're going to find things like estimates for the size of the asteroid, the bolide, the speed at which it impacted the Earth and how much energy was in that. But then which other questions did you have to try and find answers for? Because you can't really Google how long would it take to cook a triceratops to death, which is something that, you know, we had to show in the episode.
Yeah. And it's a good point. Yeah, exactly. It's sort of, I guess, converting all of that information into on-screen details and story. And yeah, you're right. It would be much easier if you could get the cooking time of a triceratops on BBC Good Food or alike. But no, so I think part of that was I guess sort of incorporating that is trying to work out, you know, what happened, where and when, and what did that affect? So we wanted to, you know, it turns out, something I certainly didn't know is how many different levels of fallout there was from the event that happened. And, you know, there's huge waves and there's ejecta, earthquakes, you know, vaporizing, you know, heat and light energy, not light energy, heat energy. And so working out how to depict all of those was tricky because we wanted to make sure we were accurate with it. So if we wanted to show, you know, the waves, we had to make sure that we showed the waves at the right time when the animals weren't actually already vaporized or the animals weren't in pitch black already. So we had to find locations where each of those events happened sort of first in a way so that we could depict them without a whole other mess of other things happening and work out which species we could use. So for example, our Alamosaurus we had with the rising water, we had to make sure they were inland location so that that was a subsequent effect of the earthquakes that happened, which would have reached them before the huge ejecta cloud. Whereas elsewhere, you know, if we were looking at using the ocean tsunamis, they took 9 hours, it turns out, to travel across the water. And by that time, everything was in pitch black that they hit. So that makes not very good telly. So yeah, we had to be really, really look into and do a lot of number crunching, which Tom, I have to admit, did a huge amount of, to work out exactly what happened where and how we could depict that.
So it took years to make this. It took years of research and pre-production and production. During that time, there was the new fossil site, Tanis. That one recorded details of the day that the impact occurred. There was so much that's in that. Episode 137 of PaleoCast, obviously. Uh-huh. We've all listened to that.
Remember it well.
Yeah, exactly. Me too. Did any of those details manage to make it into the episode, or was it just, did it come out too late?
Yeah, so actually, no, Tanis was a huge help, so particularly on the sort of wave part that I mentioned. And so we wanted to show how the water behaved and how that impacted things on land. But we couldn't really use the ocean tsunamis because, like I said, a lot of the time they took so long to move from the crater that to show anything on land would have been pretty devastated already. So what Tanis did was sort of gave proof, you know, there was layers of fossilized fish in there, but within those layers of fish, there were small spiracles. I don't know where to pronounce it, I think, but tiny little beads that were basically part of the ejecta that fell back to Earth. And so within Tanis, there was mixed layers of fish with these bits of ejecta all mixed in, which meant, you know, obviously those fish in layers had been displaced and that wasn't sort of naturally how they would fall. So it meant that something had happened in those locations prior to the arrival of all the ejecta cloud. And it turns out that was sort of formed by these inland waves called seiche or seiches, and it was basically the huge earthquake sort of ripped through and moved much faster than any other fallout and reached past the world first, and that caused huge shaking of the land, creating these giant inland waves, which then allowed us to show that basically we were able to do it in daylight. We were able to do, you know, have the sequence where we could see the details of all this water moving, thanks to the evidence from Tanis. So it was definitely really helpful for that part because that was a real head scratcher for a while. So that was a real help.
Yeah. And there must be so many details that you could get into this scene. So are there any other like really surprising details that you found out? Are there any that you wanted to get into the scene? And are there any details in episode 6 that we as the audience might have missed?
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I think what's amazing about it is that I certainly didn't realize, I mean, the details of it in general, I didn't realize how many different killing mechanisms really that were a result of the impact. And my favourite part, if that's probably not the best phrase, my favourite death-causing mechanism was the ejector, this cloud that went, you know, across the Earth, and all the superfine particles that were, you know, going back down towards the Earth's surface. Basically, the friction of them and the atmosphere created the whole sky to turn into a grill, essentially, and that was, you know, hundreds of degrees hot on the ground level, caused by this re-entering ejector, essentially, and that, I mean, that blew my mind. Just the idea that you were there on Earth, and I guess anywhere on Earth at that point, there would be no darkness really, because everywhere is lit up by this burning hot sky, which is pretty grisly. But I mean, that's insane. That's just crazy.
Yeah.
And then that was then followed by complete lack of sunlight and lack of light reaching the Earth's surface from the sun, because it was blocked out by the cloud. And yeah, it was very, very crazy contrast that it went from glowing sky everywhere to complete darkness, which I think was the most interesting detail of it for me anyway. In terms of what we'd love to get in there, I think the details around the actual point of impact in Chicxulub, so the Chicxulub crater, would have been, you could have done a whole episode on that, basically. The details of the biome of the asteroid sort of hitting the ground and going like 20 miles deep, I think, and the crater that's 110 miles wide, I said 20 meters, 20 miles deep. Huge crater, and the way the sort of Earth, I guess, kind of rippled, as if you'd thrown a stone into a pond, sort of the same rippling, I believe, sort of happened with the Earth's crust, and then that all came down. And I mean, to be in that point on that day, and we didn't really go into it in the series because it's quite a localized fallout, I guess. You know, there's only one crater, and it didn't affect things on the other side of the world, just that crater. We didn't go into it there, but there's a lot of amazing stuff that happens there. But to be quite honest, I don't think I ever fully got my head around the exact details of it.
No, you mean scientists are working on this? Like, how many?
Yeah,
tens? 50? Yeah. Scientists dedicated their life to trying to figure this out.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
It's a big thing.
And they're still doing it, and it's amazing the work they're doing, drilling down into it. So, yeah, so that's a shame, but I'm sure there's plenty more to come on that. And I think like I said, the sort of the sesh events inland, I think, were sort of something. I think you could probably assume that when you see a huge tsunami wave coming to land, naturally, I think you would assume it's coming from the ocean. But what we're depicting was all happening inland, and they're waves that are hundreds of meters high from lakes, which doesn't seem like it would be possible, but it happened, which is crazy. And I think that's a really interesting detail. And I guess if you grabbed if you want to see what a sesh looks like, grab a washing up bucket and just shake that back and forth. That's what we did to get our heads around it. And you see the waves splashing side to side and peaking up in the middle, and it helps to understand it. And if you want a more Alamosaurus sort of first-hand view of that, try it in the bath. And you get splashed around a bit that way.
Don't tell me that the CGI for the wave was actually shot in a bath or something like that.
Look, we can't reveal too many secrets of when Tom was in the bath filming the water go back and forth. But yeah. We'll leave that to the imagination of others.
Right. But, you know, how many hours, how many days of your life went into this? Went into just, you know what, are going to be just a couple of minutes of CGI. So how do you feel about the fact that all of that effort is over in just the flash?
Yeah. How many hours? It's a good question. Many hours, many days, many weeks of looking into it. And it was something that kept coming up again and again as we had more questions, more questions. So yes, certainly months, maybe years, it felt like, where the KBG extinction took over. I thought my brain might be most recent victim of the whole event, but still functions now, just about. A lot of effort, a lot of questions went into it. But and you're right, it's a quick sequence on TV. But I don't know, it feels quite fitting with this event because I think that's what's so unique about this extinction compared to the others. It happened effectively in a moment when this impact happened that unlocked and unleashed the whole extinction event. So it was a lot of time, but also the fact that it happens and then it's done on TV is kind of quite similar to what happened on the day, you know, this thing hit and the world was never the same. And then also, like you sort of touched on earlier, sort of, I was looking at it for what felt like a long time, but, you know, there's incredible science community across the world that are spending, you know, careers and lifetimes looking into these things. And, you know, if it wasn't for that, we would have no idea. Hearing, spending a bit of time hearing their work and their research, was a nice thing to be able to do to get it to the screens and get it out there.
Okay, so we spoke in the first interview with you about the variety of your work, and you're going into things like looking at Camaraceris trilobites, you're looking at ice formation, you do a lot of short, intense, focused research. And so I just wanted to know whether looking at something like this event, the KPG mass extinction, does that leave an impact upon you? Haha, that's a good pun. Do you like retain an interest in that given how in depth you got?
Yeah, and you know what, actually this is, you know, this impact, this extinction event is the best example. I think it's the thing that in all the life on our planet sort of paleo research we did, it's the thing that will stick with me the most, just how insanely complex and incredible that day was. And I think that's certainly not everything I would retain, far from it, and some of the creature details. But yeah, this event, you know, I spent probably while on Lupus and a good couple of years, when people would ask me about my work, the extinction event here would be one of the first things that I would bore people with, or not bore people. I think it's so incredible. I don't know. Hopefully it came across interesting as well because of the details of it. I certainly didn't know that the impact caused the earthquakes, caused the sesh while this cloud was coming across, grilling everything, starting wildfires, blocking out the sun. You know, there's so many amazing parts to this event. But yeah, I think this definitely does stick with me. And, you know, I'm longing for that day. I'm at a pub quiz and there's a question about the KPG event and I should be able to answer it. If not, then it's definitely too hard.
There was once a pub quiz question about the eyes of horseshoe crabs. And it was like, how many eyes do they have? And I'm sat there in the pub quiz, being a PhD student, looking at optics in horseshoe crabs and sea scorpions. And I was just there like, I cannot believe there is a question about my absolute specific research interest. And I was just like, it's a trick question. They've only got two.
Yeah.
And then the answer came back and it was like 13. And I was like, I got it wrong. And I was like, no.
Did you go up to them and ask them for their source of information?
Yeah, where's your reference? Citation needed.
Yeah, God, that is funny. I bet the team were not happy with you.
No, they won't.
You were there for the horseshoe crab question, and when it came, bottled it.
Yeah. Let the team But given that this was, I mean, we've gone in our time talking to you from like the last interview to this interview, we've gone from you networking in various interesting ways to, you know, like finally seeing the show that you contributed, that you researched for, that you did so much for coming out. How does that feel to have, you know, like made it for your first real big researching work to be life on our planet, something that is going to be out on Netflix, has got Steven Spielberg and Morgan Freeman involved. Like, I mean, for me as well, like, this was my first big documentary thing, and I've got Steven Spielberg involved and Morgan Freeman, and my name's on the end of it. Like, how do you feel about that? Because I think it's amazing.
Yeah, it is. It's really incredible, and I feel, it just feels a bit mad, like you said. I'm you know, for when it comes out on Wednesday, seeing it on the home screen Netflix, I hope is going to be quite an amazing and surreal moment. And I feel super excited for everyone to see it, and you know, seeing the photos of the billboards up, you know, for you know, a core team, obviously a huge amount of people involved, but a core team in Bristol, in a sort of office of, you know, this is the final result. Yeah, it's going to be incredible, and I feel, yeah, super excited, and I'm very proud, and yeah, privileged to have been given the opportunity to work on it. And also slightly nervous, maybe, or just hope that everyone enjoys it, and hope that it goes down well, which I'm sure it will. Like you said, it's a pretty all-star cast at the top on the credits. So just hope that everyone enjoys it.
What are your plans for watching it? Have you got the day off to watch it? And who are you going to watch it with?
Yeah, so haven't got any days off. That'd been a good idea, but
no, they don't give you it.
I know, it's outrageous. It's outrageous, isn't it? We have to come in and do our job in the meantime. Well, I think there's a screening event going on here, and then I got a projector in during lockdowns. There was nothing to do. We got a projector just to watch things on to you know, to have a bit of fun. And so we'll be getting that up in the flat. Now it's October. It's dark enough so that we can get it on the wall, and we'll get lots of friends over and have a couple of drinks. I mean, thinking about some sort of dinosaur-y, paleo, you know, themed food choices for it, outside of the obvious turkey dinosaur. And so, we'll get people around and friends and family. And we finished the show. I guess we finished it. Or certainly I was less involved in it from the start of this year. So it's been great to have a bit of a break between seeing it and it coming out, because I'm sure I'll be watching it a few episodes repeated. But I'm very excited for that again. Looking forward to people's responses, and hopefully no one has to do a pretend enjoyed response to it. I'm sure they won't. It'll be great.
All right. Well, I hope you enjoy it. I have definitely enjoyed watching it myself. Thank you so much for coming on and talking to us.
Yeah, no, thanks, Dave. Yeah, it's been great to catch up with you again.